Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss, Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers.
You're now listening to Greg.
Hey, everybody. This is Greg Soul with the Brothers Wiss number 75. This is Greg from the motherland, Texas, greatest nation on earth. Right here is Mike Hammett from Chicagoland.
How's it going?
And there's no telling who else might show up during the cast. We sort of call everybody, leave it open. If you want to pop in, you pop in. Let's see. Let's get our vegetables out of the way again. Again, we are sponsored by Sonar, scalable, intuitive, comprehensive ISP billing and operational support system. So automatic billing of your customers helps maintain all that stuff. PPPoE authentication, DHCP authentication, IP address assignment, also does IP address management, all that good stuff wrapped into one. Go check them out at sonar.software. Also,
quick question on that.
What's up?
So do you like, each cast, do you just like improv that, or do they like give you something to say each time? It's always something different, and I'm just like, it's an idea to cast. I was like just parroting the same crap, like Sonar does good stuff, go buy it.
No, I just make it off the cuff most of the time.
I guess that's why you're better than me.
Maybe I'm just good at making crap up. So I guess that just means you. What does that make me, less reliable? You know, right? You never know if I'm making it up or if it's actually fact or what's going on there. I would have made a good lawyer, I guess. There you go. Yeah. Destined for the debate team. Let's see. Let's give a shout out to some of our new patrons. We've got Dave Wilder, Edwin Sanchez, and Mike Niddle. Mike, my homeboy from Idaho, Potato Man, he's apparently a fairly devoted listener, and I've been working with him on a few different things. And actually, he was doing some scans on his Microtix. It didn't matter which ones he scanned, he was getting like some ports open in the 20,000 range. It's like 24768 or something like that. And every Microtix he scanned, he would get those open. Subsequently, I started scanning some of my Microtix and other, just various things I could find, and it wasn't showing open on any of mine. So we still haven't sussed that one out. I got to figure that one out. He's probably listening to this right now saying, stop giving all my secrets away. But it's interesting. So yeah, he is one of our new patrons. And so when we say patron, those are going to be the cats that hang out in our Slack. So all of our patrons get access to private Slack. We call it the Little Brothers Wisp. So a great resource. You can go in there, ask questions. I learn a lot. Actually, we talked about it on our IPv6 podcast, that it's getting harder to keep track of what's going on. We have so much conversation in there now that we got to come up with some system to kind of, kind of aggregate all of the different topics we've talked about or something like that. We got to come up with something. Because if you go away for a weekend and come back, it's going to take you 45 minutes to crawl through everything. So we need a TLDR section on there, I guess.
So yet, I think I saw somebody posted a link to like a Slack app that does like upvoting, like counts that stuff. So maybe you can look into that a little bit more. Just tell people, make sure you upvote things you like, and maybe there's some channel that you can go to see the uploaded stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, it'd be cool. So I just mentioned it, but we just did a Brothers Wisp on IPv6. I think that went live Thursday morning.
I think it was
morning?
2 days ago.
Was that Thursday? Yeah. Thursday morning. That was a really interesting one. Man, we had a lot of folks on there. And it was really just kind of a back and forth dialogue of, I played devil's advocate. Why do I need to run IPv6 inside my network? And so it was just a lot of questions from an idiot's perspective, which I'm really good at for obvious reasons. But I thought there was a lot of good discourse. I learned a lot. It actually gave me some homework to look in on. So it made me a lot more optimistic for sure. How'd you feel about it, Mikey?
It was about an hour and a half. It probably could have gone to 6 or 7.
Easy.
And still had plenty of stuff to talk about. Mm-hmm. Which actually I think we'll probably come back a couple months and do like a part 2 you know, go over some other stuff, you know, field some questions, which, yeah, to, you know, give us your IPv6 questions so then we can address them and whenever we do part two. But yeah, no, it, I think it was good because we had, you know, two guys that have been doing it for, you know, 15, 20 years, as well as a couple guys that haven't even touched it at all, ever. So it was nice, you know, mix of people with different experiences. And, you know, I think that resulted in good questions and good answers.
Yeah, a lot of varying viewpoints. I like that a lot because, you know, the guys that have never touched it and the guys that have just done a little bit. And I mean, they're all going to have questions I wouldn't even think to ask, right? That are really good ones. And Nick, being kind of the foremost expert we had on the podcast, actually added his notes on his forwarding plane blog. And we'll add the notes to that. We'll add notes to his notes section in our notes section. So there you go. If that wasn't notes complicated squared. Enough. Yeah, and then I also wanted to read out all of the pickles we got. We got, at least on the YouTube video, we got Alan Pinkleton, Kevin Wolcher, Ben Chase, Petri22, 007, and Adam Quinn, all pickled it. So I'm proud of you boys making it all the way through. Good job, guys.
Yeah, it's, and we actually got a few in the Little Brother Slack, too.
Yeah, we did. I think Ollie got it, and oh man, it's falling out of my head. I can't remember who else pickled it. I think Steven pickled it as well, or Steve. So that was a pretty good one.
Yeah, and then, you know, I totally forgot, like, what, like, that we even talked about that, like, you know, the night before. I was like, this guy's talking about pickles in the chat. I'm like, what is he doing? What is he talking about? Oh, yeah, that was just last night. We just talked about that.
All right, so let's get some meat and potatoes. We've got, who is it? IgniteNet put out some new firmware that they were really excited about. It's getting wild over there, Mikey.
Dave chimed in.
Oh, is that what that is? All that banging around. So it looks like there's some new Metrolink firmware for, what is it, version 2.2.0? It looks like it's adding some interesting additions to the point to multipoint. So it says it's extending the range to what, like double the distance of what they used to. They were previously 700 meters and now it's doubling that. Does it sound about right?
Yeah, it, I heard about this a while ago, and so it's nice to see this come through. In the email they sent out, they had I wonder if Dave even knows he's on the call.
No. Let's pause it real quick. All right. So what do you think about the Metrolink firmware announcement? You said you saw the email come through?
Yeah, it was nice to see that it finally come to public view. And looking at the little animation they have, it looks as though they just... Well, and some of the text, you know, they've been able to, you know, better able to control the beam width on the AP side. Because obviously on the CPE side, most of them are a fixed antenna, so you can't really do much. But I think it's pretty similar to what the Microtech guys did. I think they have entirely different manufacturers, chipsets, the whole thing. But it seems like they both had similar tricks to... give it more distance.
Control the antenna beam width. So is that just like beamforming? Do you think that's what they're doing? It's some just
well, they were already doing some beamforming, but I think they're just getting better at it, and so now they can get more range. You know, they can get, you know, more precise control. You know, get some more elements in there to make the beam smaller.
It says something about also being able to daisy chain multiple 10 gig omnis.
Yeah, I don't know what that means. I see a picture.
I don't either. It sounds interesting, though.
I mean, it adds station mode to the 10 gig Omni. So I suppose you could have, you know, I guess a daisy chain, but there's three radios, you know, three sectors in each one. So it makes kind of an awkward daisy chain.
If only we knew somebody who worked for IgniteNet that would be willing to talk about this stuff.
I suppose we'll have to ask some of those in the Slack chat what's going on. Mm-hmm. Explain their product.
For sure. All right, so I think you added this one to the Brothers Wiss. You said Sangoma acquires Digium Inc. Why is that important to you?
Because Digium is the company that was, and I could have some minor details off. Digium is the company that was started by, I think his name is Mark Spencer. He's the guy that also started the Asterix project, the open source VoIP platform.
Someone say VoIP.
Oh, is that too loud?
Oh my god! It's
certainly more on topic than the 5 minutes of pocket podcasting you were doing earlier.
Yeah, I was in the car when you guys called, and earlier I couldn't hear any audio, so to do an audio test, I had to mess around.
No, we're talking to like 2 minutes ago. It was like banging around in your pocket.
Oh no, I'm sitting on a bed. We came to this like holiday weekend to some Lake Arrowhead in the middle of nowhere, and got the family here and got some friends here and just setting up. And I'm like, I don't hear anything.
Oh, you got friends there? Where was my invite?
Oh, I'm sorry, dude. You're invited. You're invited. I told you you're invited to my house anytime you want.
Well, this isn't your house. This is like a special trip.
Dude, shut the fuck up. You're invited to my house. Okay. I live in LA. I got a lot of bedrooms. Mom, bring the kids, bring the wife. Hide your wife.
There you go. All right. So Mike was just talking about how Sangoma is acquiring Digium right now.
Yeah.
And what does that mean for him? He seemed to be fairly distressed about it. I was just curious why.
Well, I said that, you know, Mark Spencer is the guy that started the Asterix project. I believe he also once started Digium, which kind of focused more on hardware and other commercial aspects. I believe eventually Digium, like, took over, like, management of the Asterix project, something like that. I don't remember the details. But then Sangoma was another company that made hardware, you know, used to be, you know, PCI cards with, you know, T1s or ATAs or things like that, or not ATAs, but FXO and FXS ports. They kind of branched into making their own, you know, VoIP phones. But then they acquired FreePBX, which was a GUI on top of Asterix. I believe they acquired a couple other Elastics and some other companies that were doing similar things. Meanwhile, Digium also acquired some other companies doing Asterix GUIs, because Asterix is just flat text files. They eventually added database support and some other things, but configuring it by itself is kind of cumbersome. Mm-hmm. So a bunch of companies, a bunch of projects made GUIs for them, and they seem to be acquiring each other. And so it's just, so now it's, you know, I would say probably one of the largest, you know, Asterix projects and companies has acquired the company that, you know, has the Asterix copyright or whatever. Like, it's just merging more of that together. Consolidation, you know, is never good for innovation. You know, there's less competition in the Asterix realm. You know, I know there are plenty of other systems out there, you know, Bicom, Third Lane, some others, but these are, you know, I guess, you know, two of the largest companies in the space now came together, and it's like, well, you know, there goes that little bit of innovation.
I don't know that it's necessarily a bad thing. Yeah. It seems like sometimes a lot of smaller companies don't really have the budget or the personnel to really develop a product in the way that you want them to or need them to, right? So maybe acquisition consolidation is something that will help drive it forward. I mean, you could be positive about it.
I prefer not.
Does this mean anything for you, Dave? I know you're super VoIP Kung Fu Ninja, but I don't think you really use much Asterix stuff, do you?
everything that I mean, my PBXs are all based on Asterix. Of course, I have a pretty GUI that goes on top of it. But this acquisition, I was asking Mike in Slack channel, I believe, like, how is that going to affect us? Because I don't think it's going to affect me at all. Asterix is still going to be open source. And, you know, any company can develop on it or around it or modify it. So I don't really see how that's going to affect at least me. Yeah. I don't know what that means for the industry. I mean, what was Digium doing when they had Asterix? Like, you know, they had Astracon and that was nice and all. But I don't know if it's more of a prestige thing because, I mean, technically Asterix is open source and free. So who's really making money on it? Like, only, I don't know. Explain that to me.
I don't know. That announcement, it says Digium generated approximately $30 million in revenue last year.
Well, Digium does sell product.
Yeah.
But the Asterix component of it, I don't see how that's going to affect me or any way that I can imagine.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, no, it, you know, I don't think it'll have a significant impact on the Asterix project itself because it is open source, you know. If they screw it up, you just fork it and move on. You know, worst case. But, you know, I was looking at it from a SwitchFox versus free PBX versus, you know, Bicom or Third Lane or, you know, whoever, you know, there's less of those Asterix GUIs, those Asterix management platforms, because, you know, they're going to merge them or drop one of them or something. You know, they're not going to maintain, you know, that many separate things.
But each are maintained on by their own companies. So I don't get that. I'm not understanding something.
So Sangoma owned Free PBX, Digium owned SwitchFox. So now those two are coming together. There's less companies doing that. So there's less of a driver for innovation. You know, if it was just Ubiquity and MikroTik, you know, or, well, I guess you go back far enough when it was just MikroTik and Canopy were the two big ones. You know, there wasn't, you know, Ubiquity comes along and, you know, blows the door out of, you know, making it pretty and making it easy to work, you know, and then, you know, IgniteNet comes out with the, you know.
But you're not really comparing apples to apples because Ubiquity is a publicly traded company, so they need to make things look quick and easy.
They weren't at the time, though.
Well, nobody starts, you know.
No, but, like, that was just, I was being, like, you know, 2005, you know, when Roberts first sending out his, you know, XR5 cards, you know, those were great. And then they come out with the nanos, you know, I forgot what they came out with for the nanostations. They had something else. Wisp station or something.
It was the bullet, wasn't it? Wasn't that the first one? Screw it onto the back of a radio? Or an antenna, I should say.
No, but, I mean, but, like, you know, this was, you know, a long time ago, like, you know, like, I believe they forced MikroTik to stop being only raw product, because MikroTik was only raw product. You know, you couldn't buy a MikroTik SXT or
like
a WAP, whatever,
like a complete solution. It wasn't there.
Yeah, like, you know, I don't think they even had complete routers. I think it was just a router board, no case.
They started out just with software.
Oh, right. Well, yeah, but I don't think they started doing any of the complete solution stuff until Ubiquity did.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it was, you know, another player in the space forced them to make their product better.
Well, I think it could be, too, that somebody else proved that concept works and it works really well. So, hey, why don't we jump on that bandwagon? Let somebody else forge the path.
Sure. And, you know, I don't care what the reason was, you know, but, you know, they weren't going to do it if Ubiquity didn't do it. Ubiquity did it, and now they do.
I think they would have done it eventually, regardless. If they were already producing hardware and it was more like a garage project back in the day, and yeah, it worked, but, you know, once they came out with their finished product, I think that's where they were going from the beginning. Maybe not from the beginning. At the beginning, they just wanted to be software. But I think the end goal was to be where they are today. And I think that's as far as they want to go. I actually asked Arnis, one of the owners, at a couple of mums ago. What's going to happen when Cisco comes over and says, hey, we're going to buy you? Because Cisco doesn't ask. They're just like, we're buying you or we're putting you out of business. Well, Arnis says we're not looking to go down those routes. I mean, that's what he said at the time. But looking at the philosophy of how Microtech does their things, they have the give no shits attitude. And so far, it's worked pretty well for them. But
yeah,
I don't know that it's Ubiquity that kind of coaxed them into becoming what they are today. I think competition is always good. That's where innovation comes from. But back to the whole Asterix thing, I can't see anything bad coming from this, nor anything good. I just think that's what happens when you're at the levels that they're at. And I mean, at the size company that they're at, just companies buy companies,
yeah,
and
M&A.
Consolidate. And that's way over my head. I don't know what happens at that level. I only care about my little servers and my three data centers and my customers and my little vacation place in Arrowhead. So that's it.
For sure. And yeah, I mean, I think you're right. M&A, you know, mergers and acquisitions is just nature of the beast. You know, it's part of the game. You play it. And I think what does Microtech make? Like a couple hundred million a year or something like that. If a Cisco rolled along and said, hey, we'll give you $1 billion. It seems like
who would say
really
no to that?
Hard to say no to that. I mean, I get that there's idealists.
Well, Arnis said, we're not looking for more money. And look, again, he could have just said that just to say that, because this is the time to say that. And true, you shove $1 billion in someone's face, who would say no? But I don't know. I can't say anything more about that. But oh, just another thing, a quick little side point about all the different flavors of the GUIs for Asterix. I came across one called Isabel, which is a multi-tenant GUI for Asterix. And I gave it a test drive, and it seemed to really suck balls. It works. No, listen, it works, and the interface is easy. But when it comes to features, holy shit, this thing is so watered down, it's ridiculous. Like the PBX that I use, the BICOM stuff that I use, I can pretty much do anything and everything a customer can ask me for. But the Isabel shit couldn't even do basic stuff that I think is basic. So, I mean, take a look at it. It's called Isabel. I don't know the website. I even called them and asked them, if you Google it, I'm sure you'll find it. But I emailed support to ask how much is a support contract, and their support wasn't ridiculous, but again, it's not something I would build a business on. So I'll just end there.
I don't know. Maybe you're not their target market. Maybe they're shooting for, you know, just some guy that's got a building and he's renting out offices or something like that.
Possibly. Mm. But because I said I think it sucks, it sucks.
end of story. Conversation over. Got it. Oh, hell.
Yeah.
All right. Well, while we're talking about Ubiquity, we mentioned them. Good segue there. Somebody sent me a link to UniFi's new super high density deployment radios that are targeting specifically arenas, you know, I don't know, like the FedEx Forum, because when you go to the link.
I wonder if anybody has any experience with that.
Yeah, I don't know. But whenever you go to, when you ever go to the link, they actually show the Grizzlies logo silkscreened over one of the radios, which I thought was pretty cool. If you were to attempt to go into an arena and do an install and you ask them, hey, here's all the things we need in hardware, can you build it? This really looks like it would be the answer to that. It's got a lot of micro cells built into this panel. There's a whole lot of APs inside that sucker. A lot of RF channel filtering built inside, and really, technically, this thing can do 2 gigahertz. Nobody does 2 gigahertz anymore. If you are, you're doing it wrong. I know, say, I don't know, 5 years ago in the market, say for the FedEx Forum, it's technically, I think the lowest median income of any NBA franchise in that area. So you're probably going to have some older phones, so you might have to support too. But the way things have advanced in the last 5-6 years, that's not a problem anymore, right? So in an arena, you can't do 2 gig anymore. But the way they have this thing set up, it's pretty exciting. I would love to play with some of these in a high density environment. It's 802.11 AC Wave 2. I don't know. I mean, it's got beam shaping in these antennas, RF filtering. They're trying to say 1500 clients per AP, which is bananas. It's got a 10 gig interface on the sucker. So I would love to play with one of these, right? It's not going to do me any good to play with it here in my home or somewhere else. You would actually have to try and deploy this in some specific high density environment, but
actually
it's did excite
Frank. What was it? Fred Moses or Frank Moses? What was his name? I think Fred Moses, right?
Fred.
Yeah, it was Fred.
No,
it wasn't Fred. It was somebody else.
No, I vaguely remember. Well, he does the ham radio stuff, or not ham radio, just radio. But I vaguely remember him saying that he does concerts.
Oh.
And I don't know if that was just for radio communication or if he's also doing Wi-Fi stuff. We'll hit him up on Slack. He's pretty active on Slack and ask him. But also a friend of mine from way back in the day, we both worked at a small startup ISP years and years and years ago, back in like 2001. Actually, earlier than that. What am I saying? Like in 97, 98. I'll ask him now. He's the senior network engineer for the Yes Network, which is the Yankees or the NHL. I forget.
Yes, it'd be Yankees, yeah.
Yeah, but I'll ask him. I'll ask him if he does Wi-Fi in their stadium, arena, whatever they have, ask him if he wants to come on the show and give a blurb about it.
I know the cat doing the IT for the FedEx Forum, so I'm going to give him a shout. And see how he likes these things so far, because obviously they are going to be the beta testers.
Interesting. Sure.
So I don't know a whole lot of people that would be clamoring for these. I do know somebody in the Little Brothers Wisp that just did a big high-density deployment using the Unify kit, and so it's unfortunate this project didn't come along 6 months later for them when this kit got announced. But you know, it is what it is. They'll have something to try out the next go around.
What do the big boys use? Like, what do they use at, like, Coachella and all the you know, concert, outdoor concerts?
Ruckus, Xeris. Really? Those are the two big names. You know, people like to talk about Cisco. Oh, you know, Cisco Wireless. But Cisco doesn't, you know, Cisco really can't compete in the scale that, you know, Ruckus and Xeris can for high density. You know, they've got enterprise locked down, mostly through Stockholm syndrome, but they, you know, Ruckus, I think.
Doesn't Ruckus do like? Brands, yeah. Doesn't Ruckus do like Wi-Fi handoff and stuff like that? Are they the only ones that could do that?
What's interesting and different about those, like the Ruckus, right, where they're controller based, and I know that Unify is controller based as well, right, but. On some of those more advanced platforms, the controller is actually making the real decisions, right? So if six access points hear you asking, hey, I want to join the network, it will choose which access point is closer to you, and only that one will communicate with you, right? So the controller is actually making decisions for all those access points, wherein the Unify, imagine it more like a whole bunch of standalone access points that you just push out configurations. So there's no real centralized communication among access points, right? So I would still love to see how this performs, because those more advanced systems obviously come with a more advanced system price tag, right? Whereas the Unify stuff.
Sure. Oh, sure. Really, oh, yeah.
So I would love to see how these babies stack up. If they can handle the load, they can get it done, and they do it for a tenth of the cost, then, you know, maybe you don't need all that advanced control and communication amongst the clients, you know. And if you're in a stadium, do you really need zero handoff, you know what I mean, where you can seamlessly roam? If there's a hiccup when you're walking to the bathroom in your Wi-Fi, do you really care, you know, if it pops for just a second?
Yeah, I was just asking because, just to see if it can, because if it's, you know, got this central intelligence controller, Why not? I mean, the capability is there. So
yeah,
just asking.
Yeah. Oh no, I'm not attacking you. I'm just like,
no. Like, I know.
I mean, I'm going to attack you in a minute. It's just not on that one.
You'd probably kick my ass. You got a long arm reach.
It's all right. I'd hit you with my car. It has nothing to do with arm reach. Meet me out in the parking lot, Dave. And I'm going to come around and just take you out.
Meet me outside. All right, I'm outside. Where are you? Stay right there.
I'll be right there. Boom. So one thing I did notice on this, so they talked about having a, 10 gig port. And I was disappointed because it's 10 gig RJ45.
Really? Wait, maybe it's PoE.
There's another copper port.
Yeah, they got two ports
that is PoE. There's a gig port that does that. So I don't think. Well, let's look here. It's 802.3bt is the power standard that it supports.
BT. What the hell is BT? I thought it was just AF and AT.
Not anymore.
Oh, BT. What is that? Some high frequency shit?
It'll do up to, looks like, 100 watts.
Wow.
over a Cat 5 or whatever.
Is that because you can daisy chain them? You said there's two ports there?
Well, so there's the 1 gig port that does PoE, and then there's the 10 gig port. And I assume it should say here somewhere, power consumption. I don't see power consumption on here. It could just be here, and I'm just not seeing it.
It says powerful hardware. Technology combined with dedicated security and Bluetooth radios.
Quack, quack.
Just curious why it needs Bluetooth.
I don't know. Who the fuck knows?
They use Bluetooth for, like, the adoption management. The configuration. I think you Bluetooth to it with your phone, and then your phone says, hey, I'm talking to the controller, so I know how to get to the controller. Here's what you need to talk to the controller. And then, bam.
Yeah, maybe it's just like the initial setup for it, right?
If it was on the same layer 2, obviously you don't need that. If you're, doing DHCP option and things like that, obviously you don't need it. I'm not seeing... Oh, here we go. Max power consumption, 31 watts. So that's...
Still way more than you need. I mean, 100 watts. That's what I was asking about daisy chaining, where, like, you uplink one access point to the other, like the Microtik cap.
Nah, because you've only got one 10 gig port and one gig port.
Mm. Oh, okay.
802.3AT does 25.5.
Yeah.
This needs 31.
They're saying so, recommended 250 users per AP. Theoretical maximum per radio, 500.
Let's say, yeah, but isn't there like several radios in there or no?
Support up to 750 users as its recommended maximum. Because it has 3 client radios built inside.
Yeah, yeah. Is my mic working? Hello?
Yeah, I hear you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We just don't want to acknowledge what you're saying.
Look at this thing. Look at this. What does this look like standing next to my face? Here,
microphone.
Is that like,
oh my god.
I never had to hold this thing in my hand. But anyway. Cool.
All right. So moving right along. I read something. What were we doing? I don't know. I was killing time today and I popped into the Nanog mailing list because I saw something that just looked interesting. And I'm entitling it Tracking Down TCP Resets, a Hashing Story. And I have a link to it. So a guy wrote up kind of a nice little, I don't know, it's like a 2-page report on what happened to them. So in essence, they replaced some of their peering routers with some Aristas. And all of a sudden, they started getting complaints from customers about some certain websites going through, basically it sounds like CDNs having problems. they saw that the normal TCP send ACK would go through, and then all of a sudden the TCP reset would come in and it would just kill the session. So it took them a while to figure out what happened, but it turns out that they were hitting two, because they do anycast on those CDNs, right? So it's multiple, say, geographic places advertising the same IP, or maybe in the same location, right? Multiple servers. And so it looked like one connection was establishing to, say, server one, but then another packet will go to server two, and since it wasn't part of the connection, it would send back a reset. So the client saw a reset coming from that anycast address and was like, well, crap. So it just killed all these sessions. And it turns out when they got all the way down to it, that the ECMP hashing on their routers, the IPv4 fields by default on the Aristas, and apparently some other manufacturers do this too, it's source IP address, protocol, destination address, as well as time to live on the packets. And so what they found out in their packet captures are some Soho routers, just, and he didn't mention which make and models they were, but they will incorrectly decrement the TTL, and others weren't doing that. And so the ones that were doing the TTL manipulation wrong would throw off one of those packets, which would then hit their hashing on their router different and then take a different path out, which would just brick everything. So they went in and turned off TTL hashing. And the guys over at Fastly helped them diagnose the issue, kind of ultimately, you know, working with them to figure it out, one of the CDNs. But I just thought, how much of a nightmare would that be to figure out, right? You replace your backbone, then all of a sudden you just get complaints of everything failing from very specific people. And they tried changing IP addresses. They tried manipulating everything they could think of. Some people replaced routers, yeah, and it worked if they went to a different model. But, you know, how do you, oh, what a nightmare.
Yeah, like, you know, that one would be first card with works for me, ticket closed. you know, that's one thing that I try to get a lot of people to do when they're, you know, this isn't working. Okay, capture the packets and dig in Wireshark. Like, the answer's there. You may not understand what the answer is. You may not be able to grasp from Wireshark, you know, this is the problem. But, you know, if you're just randomly doing stuff, you're not going to find it. Just look at the packet capture, find what's different.
Yeah,
that is the worst advice I ever heard in my life. Yeah, it's very true. Yes, yeah. You do a packet capture, but you ask your customers to do a packet capture?
No. Kidding me? Like you do. They go, you capture their packets.
Oh, okay. All right. That sounds a little better.
You know, now obviously after you've already done, you know, your normal troubleshooting of working through, you know, most likely to least likely, okay, can't figure it out, now do a packet capture.
By the way, that would be one hell of a diagnostic, because capturing packets at the endpoint, well, that's one thing. You're seeing the issue after the fact, but you also have to capture the packets before it gets to that router that's screwing things up, so you can see what the difference is between packet before it traverses your router and after it traverses your router. So, well, that would really be a nightmare.
Like, in this scenario, I think the only way they could have ever come to this conclusion is the fact that Fastly helped them, because Fastly was looking at the network on their side and saying, hey, I see you hitting this server, and then I see you hitting this server, and we're sending the reset back. Because it apparently, you know, if you're hitting an anycast IP, it's going to reply back from all the servers as if it's that same one, I guess, in this scenario at least. So if these guys weren't kind enough to take a few minutes to help this guy troubleshoot, his stuff would probably still be bricked up to this point. I don't know how else you would figure out, because I would never think to check TTL in specific packets from customers and narrowing that down to my hashing algorithm. That's such a leap for me to think that I would ever get there on my own.
That would be a leap for anyone, because you would have to have understanding of what is responding and where it's coming from, and what are the parameters in the original packet. So yeah, that'd be pretty difficult to figure out. Sure.
Yeah. You know, at that point, I think it probably boiled down to, you know, either A, someone brilliant enough to think of all of these possible little nuances or somebody that's just looking at two different things, what is different? Just scrolling through the pages, when do I find something that's, oh, this line is different. Pass it on to somebody else that can interpret if it's significant or not.
It never occurred to me that TTL would be part of a hashing algorithm. You know,
that is a little strange, right?
Yeah, I guess it makes sense. Like, because I guess theoretically, that could be an indicator of path variance, right? Like, if something's the packet's got a TTL of 20 and the next one's got 100, well, obviously, there's probably some difference in those length paths, you know, distance wise. So maybe
it makes sense. It's something that's easy to inspect. In hardware, and can be used as another variable to better balance, because if you're just doing source destination IPs, if there's lots of if there's like a whole dorm of students natted behind an IP address watching Netflix, I mean, you're gonna saturate the one. Well, I guess they probably the same TTLs then too, but it. But it's just another variable to help kind of make things even.
That's cool.
I like your definition of why they might use a TTL. That's, you're a pretty smart whip. You're so smart, your head pushed all the hair out of your head. No more room for the brains in there.
It's because I think so hard that I need all those extra calories, so my brain just eats the hair. That's what.
Just pushed it out. Hair, get out of the way. We need room for more brains.
It just all moved from my head to my butt. That's terrible.
Oh, man, dude. That's just age, man.
Yeah. It is what it is. It's come flying out my ears.
Oh, snap.
Yeah, it's just poof, and it's there. Let's see. Something else. I was talking to Disher over at ISP Supplies, and he's doing some tower training, and I said I'd give a shout-out.
Yeah.
But what really... I don't know. What really kind of caught me on that is I know a lot of WISPs that just, they buy a harness online and then they start climbing, without any additional instruction. And I may or may not have been one of those at a time. And I was thinking, how prevalent is it for people to actually do tower training versus just, kind of figure that crap out on the job? So I had, before I started climbing, I talked to experienced climbers, and I didn't actually do any training, but I talked a lot to guys, especially about hardware maintenance, hardware safety, and safety in general, all the things you should do, and a lot of the things you shouldn't do. What it kind of boiled down to me is, if you've got anybody you're responsible for, you've got a wife, you've got a child, you've got a partner of any kind, anybody that's you're financially responsible for, it's 100% tie off, right? Because if you die, then, well, I don't know, unless you've got a really big insurance policy, then, let them hit the lottery. But how about you, Mikey? Have you done any training? What's your thoughts on training?
So those are different. That's the what. Do as I say, not as I do. But I've had a fair amount of informal training. Doing climbs with other people that have had more significant amounts of formal training. And opportunity's been there. It's just I'm just so busy time. But as long as you have reasonable hardware, you maintain 100% tie off, and you tie off to things that are, capable of withstanding a fall. Don't grab the LMR for your tie off. I just chose something that's obviously way too weak, and it went to something that would be, so we're like, oh no, that's good enough. No, it, make sure that it can actually handle, 5,000 pound. Force. I think that's what the rating is for, falling person.
Well, I think something somebody told me is, if you're climbing something, don't necessarily tie off to the exact thing you're climbing on, because if that's what breaks, then your tie off is going to go with you. So, use caution when it comes to that.
Yeah, so yeah,
not individual rungs of the ladder, but maybe the side of the ladder sort of thing.
Sure, yeah, no, and there's lots of places that like won't let you even open the gate if you have if not everybody has been through full certification.
I'd be curious to hear what people's thoughts are on that. Obviously, there's going to be some tower climbing instructor that's going to say 100% do it, and then there's going to be some rednecks like me that say, yeah, just don't be stupid about it. I wonder what the kind of the average consensus is. I bet most people don't have tower certification.
Hey, you know, if you want, somebody I used to, I guess, work for, I used to do IT for their company. They were a tower company. They built towers mostly for cell phone stuff. So they did a lot of work for Tower America and Nextel when they were doing stuff and AT&T. They pretty much built all the towers everywhere they could. They started in the Northeast. Now they're pretty much nationwide. But one of the guys that did all the certification for tower climbs and safety is this guy named Mike Maeda. Not sure where he works now. I think he still works with the company in some way. They changed the company name. They changed personnel. But anyway, he's still there and he still does that. So if it's something that you think would be good on the show, I could ask him if he'd like to come on.
Yeah, always curious. People get sick of hearing from the same faces all the time. They want some fresh meat, some new blood.
I love hearing from you guys. New fish. Oh, especially on Facebook. I love it. And in the Slack room.
The Slack room. That's the basement of Dave's house. He calls it the Slack room.
Bring out the gimp. So what else we got on the chopping block? Because I want to get to my little new idea.
Oh, Lord have mercy. Mike's got secure your routers on here again.
Obvious reasons. I think it's something we should do every show.
Just tell people to secure their routers?
Just every show, spend a minute or two telling people they need to secure their routers. Because every day there's somebody new posting in the Facebook group about, I noticed, all these, sessions leaving my router and then, they've been exploited and, they're using me, they're being used as a proxy or, they can't log into their router because someone else did and changed the credentials or even not being that severe. People that say, I've got Winbox turned off on all my MikroTiks. Is that all you did? Because then the web server is still vulnerable. The API is still vulnerable. You need to, and feel free to build upon this. You need to build an address list. Well, this applies to all hardware that's on the public internet, but MikroTik is the, flavor of the month.
It's what we talk about, Cisco got hit too.
Yeah.
But we talk about MikroTik.
But there's, make an address list that is of the IPs that absolutely have to get in, your management network, which you can still get attacked through that if you've got some stupid flash, infection from some bunk website. They can still go through that to get in. So you still have to maintain security on what you allow, but, whitelist of IPs that will automatically get approved. An address list of your router's dynamic routing protocol neighbors, your BGP neighbors or OSPF neighbors, and make whitelists that accept, from these IPs on the BGP or OSPF, ports and protocols, because, you don't want to whitelist your upstream's router just generically, only whitelist it for BGP and then drop everything else. It's not securing Winbox or securing Telnet. Allow certain IPs, drop everything else.
Yeah. Something I said, so I made a dirty blog post on it. Because you were complaining that I didn't have a blog post. You said for those with blogs, and I was thinking, all right, fine. But I said, number one, upgrade to a version of MikroTik that's not impacted, right? So go ahead and upgrade your code. That's probably an easy one if you can do it. I'm not saying, you know, just go and blanket upgrade all of your stuff and then your network's going to break because something, you know, is a little tweaky in the new version or whatever. Yes. But, you know,
it's happened to me.
Exercise caution. disable any services you don't need, right? If they're not on, they can't be exploited. And then just like Mike said, create a address list and just allow people in on that stuff. And another simple one is you can change the default ports those things listen on, right? That's not foolproof, but, you know, there's little things you can do. You can do port knocking, stuff like that. We've talked about it. But something I thought that was interesting that came up in the IPv6 one is IPv6 podcast we just did a couple of days ago is they said whenever you turn on IPv6 by default, there are no default IPv6 firewall rules, right? So all of a sudden your router is now listening on those existing services you have running. It's now listening on IPv6 as well, right? So it's now accessible via the V6 addresses. So, you know, keep that in mind.
Sure. On that note, since we know people from MikroTik are watching, because whenever we make some incorrect statements, we get feedback that they were incorrect. So since we know you're watching, can you make for us IPv6 default firewall rules and stuff that, you know, people are just going to delete them anyway, but at least then you can say, you know, here's what you're supposed to do.
Exactly. You know,
it's your fault.
Yeah, it's the no fucks given attitude. Secure your firewall with IPv6.
Yeah, there could be a default that's in there. And anybody who's listening who wants that to make or wants to officially register that, you can send an email to support@mikrotik.com and
let's flood them.
Make your feature request. Well, I mean, I thought it was a pretty good idea. You know, just have a default firewall in there. And if you need to disable it, I mean, it will only take you a second to control A and hit the minus.
Yep.
For those that didn't see the IPv6 show, go watch it. But then B, MikroTik devices are secure in IPv6 by default because by default IPv6 is disabled.
That's how I secure it. I just turned it off.
Did you have to throw that in there because you knew somebody was going to email us and say that?
Yeah, I figured somebody would because I probably would if I was watching the show.
Hmm.
If.
Well, I mean, I guess I could email myself, but it seems kind of productive.
And you know what? They have changed the default rules. I mean, a while ago, not too long ago, probably in the last year, I would say. I've noticed that some of the rules, for example, now they default fast track as part of their default config. They also added a rule that is kind of interesting. It's a catch-all deny rule for forwarding to new connections that are not destination NAT.
Yeah, I saw that.
So that's also kind of sort of new, yeah, I'd
so
say.
If you
recent.
Add a destination NAT, like a port forward, it's allowed through.
Yeah. Yeah. And it disallows any public IPs that you may have sitting outside the firewall, like security camera guys love to use public IPs because they don't know what a firewall is or how to use one. So they just use a public IP. So if you have a public IP sitting there.
Yeah, that works great with how easily exploited all these Chinese security cameras are.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a great combination.
I don't recommend any of them. By the way, if you want to check out a security camera system that's compatible with just about every IP-based camera and all on VIF cameras, there's a cool one called Xeoma that I use. It's actually spelled X-E-O-M-A. It's pretty damn cheap to buy. You get a demo, but check it out. Have fun with it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, we'll use Dave's affiliate link on that one.
No affiliate links.
You know, so while we're talking about it, in MikroTik that's always bugged me is whenever you wipe a default config off a device with a wireless card, you have to go in there and enable all of the chains on the wireless interface.
Hold on. The reason why they do that is because if you turn, like, okay, so their router boards have the built-in antennas. And what you don't want to do with an access point is you don't want to turn on the access point if no antenna is connected, because you could potentially burn out the card, right? Yeah. So what they do is they just they have it off by default, which I think is kind of smart, because you have some schmucks that just turn on radios without, like when they're testing radios in their office and they don't connect the antennas, because what do I need an antenna for if it's so close to the other one? Turn it on, burn the shit out. Well, I'm sure that's how that happened. And they said, you know what? We're just going to turn this crap off by default. I'd
say that's probably a pretty cool idea, but I can also say that I haven't bought a router board that wasn't like integrated antenna in probably 8 years or something. I don't know. Ever since they started making them integrated all-in-one packages, that's all I get. If I'm going to get something with wireless built in from MikroTik.
Yeah.
So I would love a little.
Well, maybe it's one of those. Yeah, maybe it's one of those things that they've done that. It's just, they haven't touched since then. Yeah,
it's just easier just to leave it like that. It's kind of a catch-all.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, we're at the hour mark. You guys have anything extra you want to add, or you want to stick a fork in it?
No, I want to tell. Well, hold on. I'll let Mike. I'll yield to Mike. Anything?
Did we mention the pickles?
Yeah, I read the pickles off.
Okay. Oh yeah. I remember that now. Okay.
You forgot again about the pickles. Congratulations, Mike.
You're a pickle.
He is.
Pickle Rick.
All right, Dave. What's this special announcement?
Okay. Oh, so man. I think it would be a great idea. It would be fun.
Oh no.
Yes. I told you about this before, and one? I think it might be
you've told me some terrifying some very terrifying things. I don't know where you're going with this.
I think we should start giving out awards, all right, an award. But here's the cool thing about the award. It could be for something that you've done that's really stupid. It could be something that you've done that's really amazing. And it doesn't have to be technical. It could be something you did in your company or pretty much anything. This is like the elastic clause of awards. But here's the best part. What you will be receiving...
Oh no!
Is a dildo?
Oh my god!
Yes, a dildo. Yes.
From Dave's private collection. His artisanal, bespoke dildos that he makes in his basement. Remember the Slack basement? He'll make them just for you.
I'll make them in the shape of Greg's head.
He turns them. Anyways. He turns them on his lathe out of wood. They're generally mahogany. Occasionally, he gets some exotic woods in there. He likes the double entendre of it saying, you know, it being made of wood.
Let me tell you how this came about. First of all, I always thought we should give awards.
I'm afraid.
I always thought we should give awards, but then I thought, you know, awards are kind of whatever. But imagine you get a dildo in the mail for something that you did, and you're not even sure what you did. But like, all right, so here's how it goes. Okay, first of all, I want people to write in on the YouTube page, YouTube video for this one, all the comments. I want to hear what they have to say about this. Now, obviously, there might be some liabilities in there. You don't want to send a dildo to, to Steve Disher. Wrong guy to send that to, because what happens if one of the girls in the office opens it? Okay, we got a lawsuit. So I don't know if it's a good idea or just a dumb idea. Maybe the first dildo award should go to me.
So do you get a dildo for proposing the dildo award?
Here's the best part. You have to let the viewers decide.
Dave's got a closet full of those awards already, so I don't know that he needs any more, to be honest with you. Maybe the most celebrated guy we know as far as this award is concerned.
I'll tell you why it's such an awesome idea. God. Because first of all, further down the rabbit hole, look at how much we're laughing. This is fucking hysterical. Second of all, I actually bought a dildo for my wife's nephew. All right? He's in college.
He's 7 years old.
And No. He's in college. He's 21. He just went to University of Las Vegas. And he's a goalie on a hockey team. The NHL is looking at him. He got a full scholarship for this stuff, right? So I bought him a dildo. And he just couldn't stop laughing. It's the one with the suction cup. So you could throw it at things and see if you could get it to stick. So he got one, couldn't stop laughing. Okay. His first day in the dorm that he went to, he was like, thank you so much for buying me a dildo. I'm like, oh, okay. Why? He's like, because every guy there had one. Okay. So, and then I bought one for my friend Evan.
And then he realized and again, they weren't dildos. They were real. There you go. Every dude's got one. He just didn't realize.
Stick in a box.
There you go.
So I gave one to Evan, and dude, he couldn't stop laughing. And we're just like sitting in the parking lot, throwing it like 20 feet away, trying to hit people's cars and stuff. We got it to stick on windshields and whatnot. So I think it's a funny idea. It makes everybody laugh. It humbles you and it uplifts you at the same time.
No. You're going about this wrong. We don't want it in the YouTube comments. We want everyone to email Dave about why they think they should be getting a dildo from Dave.
That's cool. Yeah, that's cool. But first we have to decide. I have to.
What's that email address, Dave? What is it again?
Sure, it's david@pennytone.com. But yeah, dude, totally. Let me know what you think. Absolutely. Actually, I wanted to start a vote. Okay, so I'm going to post a link to an online vote about what they think about awards prosthesis and and see what people think. Greg, if you opened your mail and you found a big black dildo in there, what would be your first reaction? Would you laugh? Would you cry? Like,
would be your reaction? Would I cry? I would say, oh, wow, Dave's at it again. Here we are.
After this conversation, be like, well, let's call Dave and see if this is from him. Yeah,
absolutely. That would be my very first inclination. Yeah, let's give Dave a shout. See where this is going.
I want you to look at the bigger picture here. Okay, we are laughing our asses off about this.
How big is this picture?
Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, we are laughing about it. So I'm going to put a post to vote out there, and we'll just let the viewers vote on whether...
You're an insane person. All right, yeah. Or let's also say if they wanted the award to be something else, what would that award be other than a giant chunk of rubber? How about that?
Fleshlight? I don't know.
Never.
You see that? You don't want to get caught with. But a dildo is funny.
Okay. Dave, you're a crazy person. You're a very insane person. You're very special to me, Dave. Never forget.
Thank you.
Crazy SOB. And for everybody who's going to Wispapalooza, Dave will be there. So yeah. Everybody, show him your awards. Don't forget to award Dave.
Yeah, that's
Wispapalooza.
That's the city to do it in.
Now I'm starting to think I need to go. Maybe I need to rework my schedule. All right.
But I guess as you brought it up, Wispapalooza is coming up in 5 weeks.
Like October 8, 9, 10, something.
1, 2, 3, 4 weeks. 4 weeks. That don't seem right. I'm not even good with the calendar.
It's got to be at least five or six.
Five weeks.
Yeah.
And I believe the next couple days, there's going to be a price hike for the Wispa tickets. May have already happened for all I know. So make sure you do that. Make sure you book your hotel rooms. Make sure you tell us that you're going. We'll be there.
I'm staying with my wife's nephew in the dorm with all the dildos. So I'm staying free.
One more dildo.
And I'm doing training in. Yeah. And I'm doing training there. So
how much are you having to work for that?
Work for what? Dildos? Well,
all the dildo.
To stay in
there. You could get them on Amazon, like $16 shipped, you know? They make great gifts, man. Dude, if I send you a dildo, you're going to be laughing so hard. You're going to love it. You're going to love it. Okay? You might just get one.
Hide your kids, hide your wife. Dave's on the prowl. All right. So let's stick an official fork in it. Let's kill this thing. Mikey, if people want to get a hold of you out on the internet, how are they going to do that?
Patreon.com/TheBrothersWisp.
That'll get you access to the patron-only Slack. And also Facebook.com/TheBrothersWisp. Mike's the guy posting up all the cool... Oh, and we hit a milestone. We have 2,000 likes on there. So that was pretty cool.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, actually, I think we're already up at like 20, 30 already. It's like shot up lately.
Wow. Yeah.
good stuff. Yeah,
shot up.
Wait till they hear about my dildo idea.
Oh, God, yeah. Mm. Does it say shot up like Dave with some heroin? Dave, if people want to get a hold of you out on the internet, how are they going to do that?
Just send me an email. And email is david@pennytone.com. That's penny like 1 cent, tone like dial tone.com. Cool. And let me know what you think of the dildo idea. And thank you for the people that have sent me emails. Last time when I said nobody emails me, I got a handful of emails saying, hey, what's up? You know, one guy said, hey, asshole. I was like, hey, what's up?
Now it's so, for a good time. Email Dave. So let's see what happens. if you want to get a hold of me, it's greg@gregshole.com. Do a little bit of blogging there, a little bit of consulting, a little bit of everything else. I've actually got a new project I'm working on. I just got some of the assets for it back. We'll see what happens with that. Once it goes live, I'll holler at everybody, let them know what's happening. If you want to get a hold of us, again, facebook.com/thebrotherswisp. That's a good way. Also, if you're old school, contact us at thebrotherswisp.com. Works as well. What am I missing? Questions, comments, fire them our way. Again, the patron-only Slack. It's a great place to hang out. A lot of good discourse. A lot of good places. A lot of good channels in there, rather. Everything's broken up pretty well. So, I guess thank you guys. We'll hear from you soon. We talk about equipment and methodology,
so sit back and start learning. Lighting up the tower so people can start searching. Shooting up the web in neighborhoods, net surfing. We got horrible jokes, we're loud and annoying, but we're informative facts, we're not disappointing. Just give us a listen, cause fun is the mission. I'm telling you, you don't know what you are missing. Ideas and some good comedy given. If you missed the show already, don't worry, you're forgiven.